This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
Are you ready?
Go. Let's go.
From AMI Central.
Now circling in the neutral zone.
Here's the pitch on the way. 36 yards for the win.
This.
Here comes a big chance. The shot.
Is
this the dagger?
The neutral zone.
Oh, score! Oh, my God!
This is as good as it gets.
Now, here's your host, two-time Paralympian, Brock Richardson.
What's going on, folks? It feels like a little while since we've done this thing we call the Neutral Zone. Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern. And you know what? I feel like I have a little pep in my step today. And I'll tell you why in just a second. But I'll bring in my co-host for the day first. Let's start with Claire Buchanan. Claire, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Yeah, Brock, as I remember the last time we saw each other, everyone was a little more clean shaven, and yeah, it was nice to see everyone's faces.
Yes, we did. We did a neutral zone get together on the Saturday after our last live broadcast, which was really nice. It was people clean up nicely in this group. It was nice to see.
No more cavemen around, you know.
That other laugh you hear in the background is the one of Josh Watson. Josh, how are you?
I'm doing great, Brock. It is Friday. I have had the day off to do whatever I choose to do, and I just got my schedule for the next 2 weeks, so I'm happy. It is a good day.
That's good, and I'm so glad the whatever you want to do includes the neutral zone, because
of course. That's,
it's good to know that this is something you want to do, and we don't just force you to sit down and do this.
Sit and ramble for an hour. Yeah,
exactly. So I teased this a little bit, and we'll talk about it a little more down towards the end of the broadcast as well. But I'm really excited for the Paralympic Games, and believe it or not, us here at the Neutral Zone have not been on the air for a full Paralympic Games. This is our first Paralympic Games that we will be covering. And I have to tell you, as producer of this program, I have a little bit of intel on what's going on over the next three shows after this week. And we're going to be joined by Scott Russell for the better part of a half an hour next week. And he's really going to, you know, help us kind of put pieces together as to what we can expect, what we can look forward to. And please do join us for the next 3 weeks of programming. And of course, stay tuned for this program, because we have Kieran Block coming up in a bit, who's a multi-medalist in the sport of para ice hockey. And he's going to talk about a program that he was a part of on AMI TV, which is called Beyond the Field. So lots of good stuff coming up on the program. Speaking of what's coming up on the program, let's get into our headlines for this week.
Canada's Olympic team set a Canadian record for most medals at a non-boycotted Olympic Games. Canada came away with 7 gold, 6 silver, and 11 bronze, with a total of 24 medals. With us rolling into the Paralympic Games, let's hope Canada can match that or do better and bring home some hardware from Tokyo.
The Buffalo Bills quarterback Josh Allen signed a 6-year, $150 million contract, which will see him with the Buffalo Bills through 2027. This is a really good signing. If you don't have a good quarterback in the NFL, you don't have a lot going for you. And Josh Allen is a good quarterback, and I'm really happy to say that Brian Daboll is also going to stay as the coordinator for the offensive line as well, and our coach is signed long-term, McDermott. So all things looking well over there in Bills land.
Recently, the Toronto Raptors acquired guard Goran Dragic in a sign-and-trade for Kyle Lowry. Dragic said in a recent statement that Toronto isn't his preferred destination, as he has higher expectations. Dragic has subsequently apologized to the organization and its fans, saying in part, "I'd like to apologize. It didn't come out the way I wanted it to." He went on to say, "The organization has already won a championship, and I didn't." and what I said wasn't appropriate. Well, if that is an example of open mouth and insert foot, I don't know what is. And last time I checked, Dragic has some pretty big feet. I beg to differ with you, Mr. Dragic. What came out of your mouth is exactly what you intended. You just didn't think you were going to be caught.
Hockey Canada announced Tampa Bay Lightning coach John Cooper as their head coach that will lead Canada going into the 2022 Winter Games in Beijing. His assistant coaches will be Bruce Boston, Peter DeBoer, and Barry Trotz from the New York Islanders.
Those are your headlines for this week. Let's check in on our Twitter poll. And I'll be honest with you guys, this one really surprises me. Are you happy with the Toronto Blue Jays roster after the trade deadline? 58% of you said no. 42% of you said yes. Am I the only one, guys, that's surprised by this? Josh, start with you.
I'm not necessarily surprised because I'm pretty sure I voted no at the time, because you have to figure it depends on when people voted for this. As we saw on our last live program, some trades like the Barrios trade didn't happen until the very end. And so if people like myself voted before the trade deadline passed and didn't know all the deals, then they were probably not satisfied. We also have the benefit of seeing 2 weeks worth of these players on the team in order to potentially change our opinions. Aside from last night when Barrios had a little bit of a hiccup, I really don't think these were bad moves at all. But if you had talked to me immediately after the trade deadline, which we did talk, I wasn't necessarily satisfied with what they had done. I didn't think they had done enough.
Clara?
Yeah, see, I've said this a couple times. I follow trade deadlines and stuff, but I leave it to the end to give my opinion. And like Josh said, we were talking about this a week or two ago, and yeah, our minds were kind of up in the air. And they've had a great couple weeks, a stretch of games. They're looking really well together, and at the end of the day, it looks like it's working out for them.
This week's Twitter poll question was, do you believe this year's Olympic Games for Canada was a success? Simple poll, the answers are yes or no. That will be up just after the program is complete, and you can cast your votes at all of our Twitter handle and at AMI Audio, which will be given out a bit later on in the program. Coming up next, we're going to speak with Kieran Block, who is a multi-medalist in the sport of para ice hockey, and he also made an appearance on AMI TV recently. We'll discuss that and so much more with him on the other side of this break. You're listening to The Neutral Zone on AMI Audio. I'm Brock Richardson. We'll be back. Welcome back to The Neutral Zone right here on AMI Audio. I'm joined by Clara Buchanan and Josh Watson this week. And of course, I'm your host, Brock Richardson. We are going to be joined by our guest for today, and that is Kieran Block, who comes to us from Edmonton, Alberta, and is a former Canadian para ice hockey player and is a multi-medalist within the sport. He was also on a recent episode of Beyond the Field, where he discussed diversity within the para and pro sports world. Kieran, thank you so much for joining us today. Happy to have you on board.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Appreciate you taking the time.
How did the opportunity come for you to be part of Beyond the Field?
Well, I want to give it up to Greg Westlake. I believe it was him. I played with Greg when I played with the National Sledge Hockey Team for 6 years, and over the years we became close friends, and through just that experience through Hockey Canada, I got an opportunity to do a pretty special interview, and Greg just sort of echoed that. And it was great just to get to do more, spread more awareness. And so, yeah, I was pretty excited. I got the chance to come on your show.
And what was the importance for you in being involved in Beyond the Field?
Well, as I've just recently learned, it's been pretty cool. It was Canada's first, and I believe only, Black para sledge hockey player. And so it was just a really cool opportunity, one, just to raise that awareness and kind of celebrate it. Getting to be the first, I think, in anything is pretty cool. And then just sharing that awareness, because one of the things we talked about there and one of the things that I do like to chat about is just there's no opportunity, or not opportunities, but there's no role models for, I'll say, just people with color in really in the hockey world. There's few and far between the pro athletes that are visible minorities. And so anytime, you know, I get an opportunity to step up and be a part of that and help spread awareness, I'm just grateful for the opportunity, because I hope somebody out there that was kind of like me, maybe they're visible, maybe they're a minority, but not visibly. But either way, it just spreading that awareness that they can do it as well. They can get out there, they can play hockey, and just trying to change some of that that awareness for hockey and what the sport of hockey is and what it can mean for all people.
With moving forward, in what ways do you think are going to be important in promoting diversity, both in para hockey and professional hockey?
Well, I think access to resources is a huge thing. The more access people have, the more they're going to take up different things. And one thing that's really tricky about hockey, which I think is probably held by, I'll say, just by white people in general, whether that's Euro or Canadian, American, whatever, whatever their background is, it's an expensive sport. I mean, just your equipment alone in the stand-up world can run you, you know, about $1,000. That doesn't include your sticks. And you might break two, three sticks, and each stick is $300, $400. And then you got to pay for the ice. You got to pay for the organization, the coaching and everything. So it costs a lot of money to play hockey. So anytime people can support that, anytime, you know, people out there, I know there's a lot of charities and there's a lot of resources to help give people access. But I'd say access would be probably number one, especially when you're looking at somebody that's maybe immigrated to Canada. They don't have a lot of access to resources financially. And for them, you know, to go and play soccer, really, you need a pair of shoes. And at least as long as one person out of 22 have a ball, you can play. Whereas hockey, it's like, you know, you might need pucks, you might need sticks, you might need all of it. And then if you get all that, then you still need access to the ice, which in Alberta especially, it's quite expensive. I mean, you're paying over $200 an hour just for one slot ice. So again, it's just added expenses, and that doesn't even, it's not going to your neighborhood playground or your neighborhood soccer field that's driving. So now you need access to a vehicle, you need access to a rink, and then you need to have the proper equipment. So I would say that'd probably be the biggest thing, is just supporting all people getting access to that. And then I think the next thing is just people seeing other people have diversity playing the sport, and that's the easy one, because again, you want to be who you look like, what you feel like, the people you connect with. And I know for myself, when I, as a smaller guy, saw some small defensemen in the NHL, those were my role models, and I can honestly say there wasn't a person of color that I modeled my game after, not because there weren't any playing, but because I wasn't as big as a guy like George Laroque or Anson Carter. Those guys were huge. And so I mean, it was cool when I saw them playing, especially because they played in Edmonton. But I modeled myself after a guy like Brian Rafalski, played in New Jersey and was a 5'9 defenseman. And I mean, now more modern day would be like a Jared Spurgeon, or like a Chris Letang, or some of these other guys, Tyler Ennis, that are just smaller hockey players that you can connect with. But again, once you see that guy like Kyler Yamamoto, who's I believe of Japanese descent, but I think a mix, it's cool to see a guy like that because he's 5'8", he's a visible minority, and he's doing it. So I think those are the two big things that'll help get access and help bring more diversity to the sport.
Now, as much as there is some positivity coming these days with the number of players of color in professional leagues, especially where people can see them, there was a time for you before your transition to para ice hockey where you played in the Western League. And
yeah,
there was an unfortunate incident, I'll call it, where an opponent actually used a racial slur towards you on the ice. Can you talk to us a little bit about what that experience was like?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is an important topic to talk about because, unfortunately, I think it's still out there. Granted, you know, honestly, with more cameras, with more mics and things like that, and more accountability being held, I think that people are beginning to not only become aware, but that it's starting to transition where just I think we're becoming more tolerant. In that situation, particularly, we were in a pretty heated game. Unfortunately, this guy decided to call me a racial slur just kind of in the middle of the play when there's kind of a scrum on the ground or whatever. We were all digging for the puck, and I kind of lost it. I became like quite emotional, distraught, like, you know, when people say they see red or they black out or whatever. It was like I was getting to that point where I wanted to go after this guy. I wanted to make him feel the pain that he just inflicted on me. And the ref, I'm so happy. He just said, I heard it. And like, he kind of echoed, he's like, I heard it. And he was kind of yelling it at me because he saw how visibly upset I was. And probably one of the only times, in my career at all where, the ref actually was like sympathetic towards me. And in my reaction, because I mean, in hockey, you get heated and whatever. It's frustrating, and it's not the only time I've ever had that happen. You know, playing hockey predominantly is a white man's sport, and so anytime you go into, especially places where they're more dominated in a white culture. You get to see that not everyone there, you know, has the same knowledge of people, and a lot of times, sometimes it's the exact same thing for players, and they just don't have a lot of experience. They've, you know, grown up maybe in small towns or whatever, and there hasn't been any people of diversity or any ethnic minorities in their community, and so they come out into a bigger world, like in the Western Hockey League, and they start playing against players from all over the world and so on. And it's unfortunate it happened. I was grateful for the support that I got. I got an apology and so on. And the league actually made sure that when we, like, part of the guy's suspension was that they just suspended him from playing my team in Medicine Hat. And I was frustrated by it because, you know, it's like if you run a guy or something like that, guys on the, like, it'll be known that you got to fight next game. If you run a guy from behind and get kicked out of the game, the next game you're going to probably have to answer for what you did. And this guy didn't. But what I kind of realized in that situation, which was it's where I think the racism is tricky, is that when there's one guy of color on the ice and there's a racial slur that happens or something like that, everyone sort of gasps and goes, oh my God, I can't believe that was said. Whereas I wonder, you know, let's say there is three guys on his team that were of African descent, and there's another two guys on the ice of African descent. So now, instead of it being honestly 9-on-1, and not saying my team was against me, they weren't, they supported me, but it's just a different experience. But so it's 9-on-1 versus now it's 5-on-5 or 4-on-6. So it's like, visibly, would he have even said that if there's more guys? Would more people responded the way I responded? And And that's where it gets tricky is when you're so isolated in that capacity, because the support is different. And I, like I say, I'm very grateful for the support, because like I say, with the ref, I felt heard. And, but it's more of like that, almost that sympathy versus empathy. But I can't speak for anyone how they're feeling. I mean, I'm sure there were some feelings of empathy and so on. And you just kind of, you move on from it. You try to be the bigger person. You try to just, you know what, that's one person. And there's always one person out there that's going to ruin it for everyone, kind of thing. And that doesn't, he doesn't represent all people. He doesn't represent the organization and so on. And so you just, you try to just roll it off, not worry about it, not think about it, because, if I took all that in, it would eat me up and I wouldn't be able to play hockey, because I'd be too afraid of, you know, somebody calling me a name or something like that. So I just kind of let it go. Once I cooled down and everything, I mean, right in the moment's tough, and it's probably smart that, you know, they kept control of the situation, the league did, by not allowing us to play him, because you don't want things to get out of hand. You don't want it to turn into, well, you know, maybe there's another guy on his team that's right behind him, encouraging him to do that. Now, you know, if there's a fight, it's now two guys on two guys, and, well, I got to stand up for my friend. All of a sudden you have a bench brawl. And that's how some things like that do happen in hockey, unfortunately. And that was how I was playing hockey in a time where we had bench brawls, we didn't have any bench brawls, so we had line brawls. And everyone's fighting, and you just don't see that in hockey anymore. And I'm glad that hockey's cleaning up that way, but I think they handled it the best way they could, and they just kind of avoided it, kept him away from me, which, you know, probably a pretty good thing in the grand scheme of things. And then you try your best to move on, and you just hope that he learns from it. You hope that other people learn from it, and you try to grow from those experiences.
We're joined by Kieran Block, who is a national team para ice hockey player since retired, and he's talking about his experience on Beyond the Field. And of course, you're listening to the Neutral Zone. I'm your host, Brooke Richardson, joined by Claire Buchanan and Josh Watson.
Now, aside from having an apology given, what advice could you give not only the person hearing that slur, but the person giving it? What kind of advice would you give those people moving forward after a situation like this?
You know, for the person that's going to hear it, and the one it's directed towards, as much as you can, take a deep breath and try to really get your emotions in check, because it is a time where your emotions, they go from 0 to 100, I'll tell you. I'd like to think I'm a pretty level-headed guy, but when, you know, people start using derogatory language for any people, I get pretty frustrated. I don't like to hear it. And so there's times where, you know, I'm out in the public or whatever, you're walking down the street and you hear stuff like that, or you hear people just not using kind language. And what I try to do is just take a deep breath, because in that moment, if I start, you know, yelling at somebody else just that I don't know on the street or whatever, you know, maybe it comes directed at me, it's not going to help. That person's already escalated and probably sore you. So I do my best to take a deep breath and just collect yourself, relax, and just, you know what, as best you can, just ignore it. And for the person saying it again, I hope that they can look inwards to themselves and see why it's not okay. See why things are changing. And just try to be more accepting of everyone. But you know, it's probably the person that used that language is so insecure at themselves that it's like a defense mechanism of what you don't know, and they're just trying to be hurtful because, you know, they're probably feeling pretty low. They're probably feeling pretty self-conscious, and they probably have pretty low self-esteem. And so, like any bully, they're just using whatever they can to hurt, and they're not really thinking about what their actions are. So, yeah, I'm hoping that those people, you know, after a situation like that, where it's intended, even if it's not intended, they can grow from it and develop maybe some more character. Cause I think you can't have much character when you're using language like that and you're talking to people like that. Cause, I don't know. it just, like I say, in my experience, it's not language that I would use or that I know of people that I respect in my life. And I don't know too many people that do. And so, yeah, hopefully they can learn from that and just see how foolish they look when they use language like that.
Given that experience and given that you have transitioned to para ice hockey, is the para sport world better, worse, indifferent?
Yeah, definitely different. But I'll say better just in acceptance. And why I say that is because in the para world, everyone's got something. Nobody is like all, and I know I can use this term loosely, able-bodied. Everyone's able-bodied in their own way, but everyone's overcome something in the disabled world. So I never really felt a whole lot like my race came into it. I never really felt like I was sort of looking in the proverbial mirror of somebody attacking me because of my color. Somebody that's, you know, been born, had their feet removed, like Greg, and had to grow up in a world where they've had to do things differently their whole life, that teaches that character and that resilience. Somebody that's been in a car accident, you know, at the age of 23 and become paralyzed and had to figure out how to do things a little differently, that's teaching a lot of resilience and perseverance. And through those skills, they look at people as, I'll just use myself, when I looked at other people that had gone through those situations, that was what got me. So versus maybe ethnicity, it might be disability. So it's like you have your walkies and your wheelies and use playfully kind of group yourselves that way, or your amps and your single leg amps versus your double leg amps. And it's like, it's a really cool way in that sense, because it you get categorized like, oh, the American team has three guys that can walk, or oh, the Japanese team has seven single leg amps. And it's, so everyone's getting grouped together by their disability, which it doesn't discriminate the class of the human. The integrity of the person is still kept in check. And I think too, it helps when you go to competition outside of the Americans and a couple of European teams. I mean, really nobody sort of looks like you. So when you play Japan, everyone's Japanese. When you play Korea, everyone's Korean. And so you don't have, like, the Koreans are looking at us going, well, we're the minority, and we're looking at the Koreans going, so it just doesn't even really enter the playing field. I know, like, Norway had one of their backup goalies was black, and it was kind of like, you do give the nod as you walk by, and it was kind of fun to see him. And I know the American team has a couple, I believe, Spanish guys. I apologize if I'm wrong on that. So you get to see some other cultures, but that's where most of those guys, especially from what I know from the American team, they don't come from a hockey background. So they never were around that community. They didn't have, you know, 20 white friends every year that they were going to, you know, war with when they'd go in the dressing room and getting ready for every game. They got into it later in life. I know a lot of guys came from the army and things like that. So their backgrounds aren't rooted in a white culture. Whereas, like, even growing up, I laugh because as much as I am a visible minority, I never felt like I was a minority until it was brought to my attention, until somebody used a racial slur or pointed it out. And I always thought it was fascinating when only a handful of times for my parents, my dad is British and English and so on. And my mom is South African, so she's the dark one. And when I would see her speaking to a parent that was dark or black or just of another minority, I would sort of stop and take notice, because it didn't happen very often. And I was like, oh yeah. And it would be those few times where I'd realize that I'm not white. I'm not the same as everyone else. But otherwise growing up, everyone in the dressing room was white. And so you assimilate to what you're a part of. And I had a lot of opportunities, and I'm grateful for that. And so I know that in sledge hockey and in the para world, it's more inclusive, just generally speaking, because more people are coming from different backgrounds and different experiences where they're just trying to survive, you know, let's just say getting to the bathroom after losing their leg and trying to adapt to having their amputation. Their challenge is getting to the bathroom. They don't care what color you are, who you are. If you're friendly and you also lost your leg, you can right. connect on them with a level that many others can't.
I think too, though, Kieran, the relatability piece, when you can relate to someone on a different level, you know, disability, their ethnicity, that really breaks a barrier down really easily and quickly in the world.
Absolutely.
And whereas when you can't relate to that person on a different level, it's harder to build that, you know, foundation, because they don't know what you're going through and vice versa. And when you're in that parasport yeah. community, everyone knows on some level that people are going through their own challenges. And so I think that's yeah. a real important piece. Really appreciate you coming on the program today. Could have spent another half an hour with you with the great information. We hope
Thank
that
you.
You come back on the program again soon, and we wish you all the best.
No, thanks for having me on. And I'm more than happy to come on anytime. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you. And we are always an open door, and we will have you back on down the line. Coming up next, we're going to put a wrap on the Olympic Games, kind of move towards the Paralympic Games. And I have a few comments for the gang from that interview that we'll start with. Stick around for the second half of the Neutral Zone right after this. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Neutral Zone right here on AMI Audio. I'm your host, Brock Richardson, joined by Josh Watson and Claire Buchanan. And man, if you missed our last interview, you missed a very good interview, very relevant topics. And as our technician, Jeff Ryman, pointed out, it's very rare that you get someone in hockey with a different ethnic background other than, you know, white. It's predominantly white, as we discussed. And then it's even more rare when you have that in the para sport community, especially in para ice hockey, as Kieran alluded to that as well. So really great interview. Check that out on the podcast or any of our repeats throughout the weekend. We will have Kieran back on again in the future. Guys, before we switch gears to the Olympic Games, I just wanted to mention the one sort of thing out of the many things that stood out to me for Kieran was his ability to have restraint when there was a racial slur used against him. And it seemed like his morals and values kicked in, as if I add to this, you know, it's not gonna work well. A bench brawl would not suffice in this. And when you get attacked as he did, it's hard to restrain yourself, Claire. And honestly, I don't know if I could have in that moment.
Yeah. I have to be honest, I've been met with those kind of instances on the ice for being an out player, and that light of wanting to fight back, it hits you. And where your growth is restraining yourself and moving on and being the bigger person, because like he said, their hate or their ignorance is coming from a lack of knowledge and just a lack of exposure in their community to people of different backgrounds. And it's got to be on them to go through their learning process as well, but you have to keep yourself in check as well.
Yeah, unfortunately, Kieran's absolutely right from what limited perspective I can give. If someone is treating you that way, there's an underlying reason. And, you know, I'm thoroughly impressed that he was able to maintain his composure in that moment. And I'm glad to hear as part of his story that that official or linesman, referee, whoever it was, kept repeating to him, "I heard it, I heard it, I heard it," so that he doesn't have to feel alone in that moment. I mean, I grew up in a small town. I know I've heard racism directed at people, and it's just ugly. It's not something I ever want to hear, and it's something that I expect better from my friends and family when it happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people are people, and I think that's the, you know, the moral of the story here is that people are people, and there's no place for that in any walk of life, whether it's, you know, sport, any just normal life. There's just no place for it, and we need to get to a world where we see none of it. And far too often we hear stories of, you know, coaches, athletes saying things they shouldn't have said years ago, and I think we need to get into a better place in that regard moving forward. And I hope that we are and moving in the right direction, but I think we do have a longer way to go for sure. Let's chat about the Olympic Games. Claire mentioned it, that Team Canada had 23 total medals, which was a new record at a non-boycotted Olympic Games. Josh, was this a success? Why or why not?
Absolutely, it was a success. Wow, I should have had another coffee before the show. it's... Anytime you can better your medal total from the previous games or historical games, how can it not be a success? I mean, there were certainly instances where maybe it wasn't the color we wanted, or maybe it wasn't the ultimate result. I mean, I'm thinking about the pool where we had Maggie McNeil, if I remember correctly, do very well, but Penny Oleksiak only getting certain medals and certain colors that she might have expected more from. But I think the thing that always comes to my mind when I see the Olympics is, let's think about how old these athletes are. I mean, if I look at myself, I'm 43 years old, and if I was an Olympian, my Olympic career would be long over. Most of these athletes are in their teens and in their early 20s. That's remarkable that they even get to this level and have the success that they do. But to set a record in a non-boycotted Olympics is absolutely something that we should celebrate and we should strive to break. It's a record that should perpetually be broken, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But athletes need support in order to do that, and that's a whole other ball of wax.
Yeah, I was just gonna touch on that. We had a huge success at the games as Team Canada, and it's always great to see improvement games after games. And like you said, the average age of the swimming team is very, very young, and we have so much to look forward to. I, for one, would like to see us, yes, put more support into our athletes in Canada, because you see numbers like the U.S. getting medals into the triple digit numbers. And it just shows that there's that gap of support for athletes, both in Canada and if they want to train internationally as well.
And to put a parasport spin on to this, when you talk about how underfunded the Olympic team is, ladies and gentlemen, the Paralympic team is far, far more underfunded than the Olympic team. And that needs to change in and of itself. And I think there needs to be more resources put into, you know, both sets of athletes, because they are equal, comparable, and they need to be put on the same level. I want to switch gears for a couple of minutes into talking about the fact that there were 400 plus cases that were directly related for COVID-19 that were directly related to the Olympic Games. Now, for me, I had concerns about this because I thought to myself when we kept hearing this, I thought, oh no, we are going to be in trouble for the Paralympic Games. They could easily say, you know, the numbers are too high. It seems, Josh, we're kind of past that phase because a lot of Team Canada has left for Tokyo, whether it be to staging camps. I know the wheelchair basketball team left yesterday and they've arrived at their staging camp. The bocce team is leaving very soon as well. But we are past this threat of the Paralympic Games being canceled, I hope, Josh.
I think we have to be at this stage. I agree with you in the sentiment that you can't put on the Olympics and then tell the Paralympics, sorry, no dice. I understand the whole argument, you know, people with disabilities, immune systems that are more compromised, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I can pretty much guarantee you, and I hope I'm not wrong about this, but most of the disabled people I know, and certainly I would think the Paralympians, would have been first in line to get vaccinated. I just can't see a scenario where a person with a disability, unless directed by their doctor, said, no, I'm not going to take that. Because we all understand that we're more susceptible. We've all had instances where we've gotten a bad flu. And I mean, I don't think I'm a big baby, but maybe I am. I can't stand it. I'm miserable and I don't want to be around anybody. And so the chance of getting something that could kill me, could put me on a ventilator, and all I have to do to prevent it is take these two shots. Yeah, I'm going to do that. So why wouldn't I do that if I'm chasing a dream?
Claire, this is not something that the Paralympic Committee wants on their ledger, to cancel the Paralympic Games anyways, because they'd have people like me, like all of us on this program, screaming and yelling and throwing things at the computer screen going, you can't have this. This is not okay. I'd be going on every program that I could on this network, just having a tantrum, essentially. And I think, Claire, that the IPC recognizes this. Do you believe that as well?
Absolutely. I would be right there along with you, Brock. I would need to buy a new TV or something. Yeah, I would throw something. I would make my own podcast or something. You wouldn't hear the end of it from other para athletes. It would blow everyone's mind if they came back having a somewhat successful Olympic Games in terms of COVID cases and say, oh, no, we're not even going to give you a shot. And yes, Josh, you are correct. A lot of the athletes, they were first in line to get both their first and second shot vaccinations. So Team Canada is definitely going in there prepared to be as safe as possible, in my mind.
And let me just put it out there before we put a wrap on this segment. We mentioned it in our headlines that we hope that the Paralympians do better than the Olympians. And let me tell you, having been a two-time Paralympian myself, and what it says on the marquee is not a lie. I am a two-time Paralympian. And every time we went, it was like bulletin board material. They got 23. We are getting 23 at best, if not 24, because we want to staple ourselves and be there and be the best that we can be and be comparable and be recognized. So there is no doubt that all of those athletes have bulletin board material saying, we want to at least match this at a minimum. The games get going on August 23rd. And there's lots of coverage on this network, on AMI TV as well. Greg David's going to join us next week, communication and marketing, to discuss all what's going on there. We're going to be joined by Scott Russell. It's going to be a boatload of fun. Stay tuned. We're going to be all over it Coming up next after the break, we're going to switch gears to the mainstream sports world. We're going to tell you that Masai Ujiri has signed. He does have a little bit of a new title. We'll discuss that and much, much more to wrap up the show. Stay with us. I was being made fun of playfully on the commercial break because I told the team headed into the last segment, guys, we're going to close it off at 48. And without even thinking about it, the whole team kind of went, yeah, right. I was close, guys. It was 49, okay? It was 49. It was close. I really wanted to get in that bulletin material with the Paralympics, and that's what kind of put me over the edge, but whatever.
We've just come to expect that you're going to direct us however you're going to direct us, Brock. That's all.
Hey, listen, we start the show at 4 o'clock, and as long as we land the plane at 4:58, our manager will be a happy manager. So that's all that really matters. When we have good conversation, we just like to keep it rolling. So to continue that good conversation, Masai Ujiri has a new deal to become chairman and president of the Toronto Raptors. Now, it says long-term deal, but there's been no like definitive, this is how long he's going to be around. Do we like this deal? Claire, start with you.
I don't know how we don't. I mean, he came in here and helped build a not only just a team, but a culture that Toronto and Canada can get behind, and it's creating winning basketball and top tier players that are wearing the Raptors jersey.
Yeah,
I'm very, very glad to see that he's back. I was silently one of the ones who thought, the longer this takes, the more I think he's leaving. What has he got left to accomplish here? He's built a winner. He's won a championship. Where's the challenge? But I think what we've seen in this offseason is that the challenge is still there, because now that you've won it once, as we saw, with our new guard, Mr. Dragic, there's still a perception out there about Toronto, and that needs to change. And I mean, I keep hoping that some of these guys who are from the States and from other countries will go back to their teammates and friends on national teams and say, hey, like, Toronto's a great city. You guys should think about coming here if you have the chance. Because it really is a world-class city, right up there with New York or LA, you name it.
Yeah. And the piece that really should drive people is you not only have a province behind you, you have a country behind you. We saw that when the Raptors won in 2019, everybody got behind the Toronto Raptors, and the Blue Jays, to some extent, are involved in that as well. And we saw that with their homecoming
totally
a couple of weeks
there.
Ago. And they did, you know, a 9 out of 11 wins on their first homestand, and they've been playing decent baseball ever since. But there is a culture here, and I think Masai Ujiri was that piece that was like, okay, if we're losing Kyle, at least we have Masai. Remember, Masai was the guy, as I rhymed, who got rid of Rudy Gay, and no one, I repeat, no one thought that was possible, that we could do that and pull that off and then subsequently run a championship because of it. Got about 3 minutes, guys. I just want to get your quick thoughts on this. The Philadelphia Phillies retired Roy Halladay's number of 34 this week. Are you guys surprised by this, in that it wasn't Toronto first, given that Toronto drafted him in 1996, and, it, you know, they were the first, but yet Philadelphia got this done quicker. Claire?
Yeah, I think us coming from the city of Toronto as well, we kind of were hoping to expect to be first to retire his number. So I think it's just come to a little bit of a shock to the city of Toronto, just because he was so well loved here.
Yeah, for me, I'm happy that it was done, but at the same time, it's a little surprising, I think. He wasn't in Philly as long, but I think what it shows is that his reach wasn't just felt here. It was felt wherever he went, and that work ethic and that desire to be the best just left an impression with a lot of people.
Yeah. I think I have the same kind of thought, in the sense of, let's pretend that Miami decided to retire Kyle Lowry's number. I would be perplexed by that. I would wonder why. I would wonder what happened there. And I think I'm with you on the Roy Halladay thing. It's like, okay, we all know he's going to be retired somewhere, but unsure where. And I think everyone thought it was going to be Toronto. And it's like when he went into the Hall of Fame, he had an unmarked cap because his wife, Brandy, could not figure out which one to put him in, because that's a decision that Roy Halladay himself should have made. And unfortunately, he was unable to do that. Now, given his death.
Just before we do wrap here, Brock, because I know we're tight on time, Toronto did actually retire his number in 2018, so.
Oh, all right then. So I guess in that case, then it's okay. It was just weird because it was never mentioned. That is the end of our show for this week. I'd like to thank Claire Buchanan and Josh Watson. Our technical producer was Jeff Ryman. Our technical supervisor is Paula Deneen. And our manager of AMI Audio is Andy Frank. Tune in next week when you never know what happens when you enter the neutral zone. Have a great weekend. We'll be back.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.